from starting of Jan 23 till now, look at the dark one is the rain gauge index, which is only startups, VC bank startups. That's almost, you know, 114% in what, 20 months?
While India has seen a lot of venture capital getting returned because, or at least the potential to get returned because of companies going public, there's equally a dearth of companies going public in the US, which has really screwed up the venture capital returns, the cash flows of VCs.
I think if, you know, we were thinking 2025 is going to be better than 2024 from a VC point of view, at least this chart does indicate that, at least, you know, we are definitely not back to the 21-22 era.
Because see, money managers will play every sector. Unka kaam hai paisa banana. I think founders in each sector need to know ki yaar, who's the right partner to work with.
I think 1 in 5 heart attacks in India are now under the age of 40, which is a crazy stat. But I think one of the, like, two of the big correlations with cardiac events are stress and sleep. These are two things that still even a broadly healthy person is not able to measure as much of. Well, anyways, welcome everyone to episode 7 of the Asymmetric podcast. Today we have two members of the Indian cricket team, Quasi, Revanth and Chirag, joining in from Melbourne, getting ready to, as you can hear from the conversation, getting ready to be the opening pair on Boxing Day Test and hopefully take India to a 2-1 lead. Sorry for some change in the production. They're joining in from outside. I continue to be at home, but there might be some up and down on quality. So I hope you forgive. But we were thinking of not shooting an episode this week, given travel and festive season, and people have their own thing. But Revanth is a stickler for habit and routine. So he said, "Nahi, jahan bhi jayenge, hum log podcast ka equipment le jayenge, aur wahan se karenge." So kudos to that spirit, actually, and I actually really appreciate it. So Revanth,
I don't think my team likes it. They all assume that if I'm traveling, my daily WhatsApp and emailers will not come. But what we've realized actually in travel is it's even better, considering you get time to think. And you're in a different time zone. So by the time you've gathered your thoughts and you have your instructions ready, then India wakes up, and then I think the follow-ups become actually even more easier.
Yeah, I think someone had told me this about absence value, that your presence creates some value, but your absence creates a lot more value that you don't realize, because then there is a lot more seriousness and scarcity that gets associated with your instructions, feedback, etc. So yeah, staying away also helps. It's a good thing.
Great. Kya hai aapke paas chart aaj?
Interesting. I think we are towards the end of 2024. Maybe, you know, we should revisit our memories, you know, in terms of what has happened in 2024. Maybe go through some of the charts, what at least stayed with us. I found a few interesting links. People have already done a lot of this stuff in terms of, we see a lot of LinkedIn posts, you know, our learnings in 2024, our reflections of 2024. But maybe I think we'll go through some of them. And would love to get your views. And this is an interesting blog wherein they asked a few prominent VCs and founders to give out one chart each, which stood out in 2024. I think this is interesting. India is now the fourth largest equity market globally. So we are now $4.9 trillion. Can anyone take a guess what we were in like 2000, 2003? What was our market cap 20 years back? Yeah, so we were 10 lakh crores. So around what? $150 billion?
Yeah, and but that time rupee India was probably 40.
40, yeah. 50. Yeah, 50-ish.
Many? 45 type. Or kam hoga.
So $200 billion, basically. $250 billion.
2003 was less than 45. Double ho gaya wahan se rupee.
So $250 billion to $4 trillion.
So tu bol raha hai aadha to currency depreciation se hua hai aise, or is it What is the math on it?
Despite currency depreciation, we have we've gone from 250 billion to 4.3 trillion, basically.
So in INR terms, you're saying it's even a bigger feat as such.
INR terms, 10 lakh crores to 4 trillion is...
4.3 trillion. We are now...
Zeros hi bahut aa jaate hain.
I think the interesting point is, my sense is in the next couple of years, we are going to surpass Japan.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the big thing, while we have, of course, grown. And, you know, we keep finding faults in India, you know, and keep looking at, keep missing this macro. That in the 20 years, you know, 200 billion or close to 200 billion to 4-5 trillion now, which is what, which is 25 times.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, phenomenal secular compounding growth machine. You know, we have had different governments, by the way, in between. We've had now third term of Narendra Modi, prior to that a UPA, two terms of them, right?
Yeah.
So amidst, you know, all the different governments, India continues to grow. You know, my read here is that let's be very, very long on India story. We might have these ups and downs in between secular, you know, in between the recession and all those things. But I think overall looks like the country is even more set for this kind of growth. You know, I didn't see a lot of, you know, at least what we all three do, a lot of this startup momentum way back in 2003,
2004,
2005, which is now, I think, a new fuel in the overall scheme of things. You know, I remember, Revanth, you were showing us that Rainmaker index, which has started to become an interesting thing. You know, if you start to, and it's, by the way, just for viewers, it's an index which has all startups which are now publicly listed.
All VC-backed startups, I don't, listed publicly, and their stock performance against every other stock index that exists. Raingage index, right, by the Rainmaker Group, which is an investment bank. They're covering the VC-backed startups that got listed in the last 3 years or so, and so on from there. And very interesting to see that index is beating every other index, including the small cap index, over the last.
Yeah, I've got it. Let me present. Got it. Yeah, this is the one Raingage index is what Revanth was referring to by the Rainmaker Group. From starting of Jan 23 till now, look at the dark one is the Raingage index, which is only startups, VC backed startups. That's almost, you know, 114% in what, 20 months?
Yeah.
Whereas if you compare it to any other index, whether it is Nifty or whether it is Nasdaq, it's like,
I think the right comparison would be the mid-cap or the small-cap index or the Nifty 500 or Nifty.
The mid-cap is 94%, right? Nifty 77%. So, of course, India market continues to outperform. But these are startups wherein we have seen Swiggy and Zomato and Policy Bazaar and now Ixigo, all of those get listed. These are the universe. It's becoming quite an interesting index. By the way, is this available to invest today in the stock markets, this index?
No. This is a private company, right? The Rainmaker Group, run by Kashyap and Kashyap. Who I think started this about 7-8 years back. It's an investment bank that raises capital for Series B, Series C onwards startups. Also does some M&A. They don't have a capital market arm. They just started tracking this. It's an interesting, maybe it's a preview to their entry into capital markets also. I really love the fact that somebody's tracking this index, and I think they come out with it every quarter after the results or so. So I think the Q2 or Q3 numbers will get updated and should be out in Jan. So I'm also looking forward to see, because now Swiggy will get added to that index as well. It was not till the last quarter. Even that's gone up. MobiKwik, which has got listed this quarter, it's almost 2x since the stock price. So I don't see this index performing, at least for the next couple of years. It's almost like anybody who couldn't invest in startups.
Should get.
In you know, when they were seed, series A, and a lot of people talk about the power law. I think the power law continues to get exhibited in these great startups post-listing. There's a, I don't have that chart handy, but maybe post-production, we can put that chart out for the audience. Shopify post-IPO has given some 1,000% or 100x post-IPO. This is crazy.
Wow. Yeah, it's some crazy number.
Go back to that one stat, one bar chart, the histogram with all of these. Huh, this is a nice one, actually. Bikaji, man. Wow. Is that the first one? Bikaji? Am I getting the logo right?
No. It is, yes. It's Bikaji. Bikaji, wow. Policy Bazaar, Paytm. So, though.
Paytm, I think now would be 100% up here. This is August 24 data.
Ha, but to be honest, this is since April 24. So if you look at Paytm, it's still down from its listing price. So this is a little bit of selective positioning that they have done here when they're looking at from April 24. They should be looking at...
But wasn't Paytm $900 listing?
Nani?
Yeah.
No. Paytm is still down from 50% from its listing price.
It's trading upwards of $1,000 now.
Last
I recollect. Paytm price is 2150.
1500 pe list hua tha.
1950 per share on the listing day performance.
1500, 1600 on day one, where it stabilized. It's still not reached that point.
Yeah.
But it's from 360, 370, shit, yaar. It had eroded 80% of value.
That's what I'm saying. So it's still. This is a little bit of selective. Yeah, there are some stocks that are, I think Nykaa is still at listing price, or I think 5% below listing price. There are a bunch of stocks that I think IPO'd in 2021, early 22, which is where in the last episode we spoke about this, right? That I think the mutual fund guys learned their lesson and just said that let's just get these guys to price as conservatively as possible. There's no way we can allow these guys to list and then have a drop from here. That's sure Sebi also wrapped them a little on the pricing. I don't know. But very clearly.
April to June, they were like languishing at the 350 to 400 mark. For a founder to have IPO'd at 1900 to come down to 400 would have been crazy. I'm glad that company is kind of found its way back to 1000 or whatever it is now. Still a way to go.
Yeah, I think.
But some good IPO this year, huh? Digit is one that, you know, I'm keenly observing. Great founder, you know, understands the business like back of his hand. I'm keen to see how MobiKwik also does. It's an interesting space. First Cry also, again, sharp retailer. So very, very good to see how very curious to see how 2025 is for these 13 startup IPOs. Let's see how the rain gauge. I also feel like, you know, like these are the indices should be seen over a period of at least 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The index for me, the rain gauge index is great, but I would love to see it since inception. Because see, if you are going to back an index, then you need to just keep buying the index, right?
Yeah.
Technically, while this index is not available on the NSE, what you could do is every startup IPO that comes, even if you don't get in the IPO, just buy 10,000 of that stock when after it lists. And you know, then the index basically, there'll always be some reset that you will need to do if one of these stocks falls a lot and goes up a little. But broadly, if you keep buying 10,000 of every new startup company that goes IPO, at least you'll be able to track the index in some way or the other. And my view is, I don't see any reason because... I think if they are great founders who are building companies, they have gone IPO in 10 years and they want to build for the next 10, 15, 20 more years. There is no reason why the company can't 10x, 20x from there as well. So inherently, from a first principle basis, there seems to be a very heavy bias towards betting on these founders and these companies that have just gone IPO. And look at where they end up in the next 5 to 10 years as well. See, most of them continue to operate with the same intensity that they did even pre-IPO. In fact, there's a Bill Gurley, who was the ex-GP at Benchmark, keeps talking about how listed markets are a great leverer and it's very important that, you know, companies go public. Essentially, just brings a lot more discipline in their execution. In fact, I think there is a chart about that as well in this blog that you mentioned, Chirag, where I think Avnish shared that chart, right? Where while India has seen a lot of venture capital getting returned because, or at least the potential to get returned because of companies going public, there's equally a dearth of companies going public in the US, which has really screwed up the venture capital returns, the cash flows of VCs in a sense, because, you know, when you're investing out of a fund. So let's say your 10 years of your fund is done, you need to return that capital and you need to draw down capital for your next fund. So if your 2015 fund is ending in 2025, you need to return capital by 2025 and you may launch your fund. So 2015, let's say, was your first fund. 2018 could be your second fund. 2021 could be, let's say, the third fund, and 2024 would be the fourth fund. So you're going to the LP and asking money for the fourth, but you need to return fund one ka money by then, right? And if you're not returning it, how does the guy support you for fund four? Because you were supposed to, I mean, in a very simple thing terms, think of it like a loan, right? You're going and asking for a fresh loan, but you have not returned what you were supposed to return by this time. So it becomes very difficult for people to believe that you will continue to perform. And that is something that's happening in the US today, where effectively the net cash flow for VCs is negative for the last couple of years. And I think it will continue to be negative in 2024 as well. All because M&As have stopped. There's a significant slowdown in mergers and acquisitions in the US. And IPOs have been very, very scarce because the pricing of IPOs would be much lower than the last private round. Like we saw MobiKwik take a haircut and just go in for the IPO at 1/4 the price of the last round. In fact, what was the company in the US, Chirag, that went IPO 2 weeks back at, in a similar situation? Was it CrowdStrike? They also went IPO at half the price of the last round valuation. But the IPO has done well. And there's a lot of push now from VCs to get these companies listed just to make sure that liquidity is available for their LPs. Without which, it's going to be hard for them to continue to raise their next funds and continue to deploy. So it's an interesting situation that last happened so poorly only in the during the time of the great financial crisis in 2008-09. A slight dip in 17-18, but sustained dip has not been seen for so long. And three continuous years of negative cash flow is quite worrying for US venture capital.
Also, in general, it has a lot of collateral damage. No, Silicon Valley Bank was fundamentally because venture capital was not coming in, deposits came out, interest rates at the same time were poor. So that collateral damage became big. So a lot of things, like there are second order implications that for me was counterintuitive, but in retrospect, made sense, just given exposure of risk.
I think the below chart is also quite interesting. This is average US fund distributions as a percentage of their net asset value.
Hmm.
So it does show that, you know, from a net asset value, this has plummeted to probably what, you know, pre-2008-09 levels, to like less than 5, almost 5%. Of net asset value is now being distributed to VC funds.
Yeah.
Which was peaked around 30%. So it clearly, you know, the earlier chart, both of them combined, clearly indicating that, you know, the net cash flow or the large LPs are not finding so much returns or realizable returns. Hence, the asset allocation is reducing.
This distribution will be, I think, highly correlated to the interest rate.
Correct. Of course, you know, when interest rates are lower, you tend to do more of these risky investments, you know, the allocation increases.
Yeah.
Our sense is that this should not stabilize at 5%, but it won't go up to as high as 30%, which is where the Zarpera comes in. So the average should be around 7-10%.
Yeah.
But clearly, I think if, you know, we were thinking 2025 is going to be better than 2024 from a VC point of view. At least this chart does indicate that at least, you know, we are definitely not back to the 21-22 era. That's like over. But it's going to be better, slightly better, but the, you know, the toughness continues.
Yeah, but if there's a rate cut, which I think people are saying there will be, I think there'll be a upswing in this. But you're right. I think it will never...
No, I think while you're talking about rates, na, like a fundamental thing is when exits are hard to come by. See, what does this chart say? This says that since the beginning of the net asset value, right, as a share, aapka, let's say 100 rupees, 100 was the net asset value beginning, right?
How much of that was allocated to?
Private capital.
In between the 5th and 10th year, what percentage of that 100 were you distributing? Now, because exits are slower, your ability to distribute as a percentage is now getting lower and lower. And that peak was, you're right, it was ZERP, but there were two things. During that ZERP, VCs also raised a lot of money. And there was a lot of IPOs, like I think Airbnb, DoorDash, a lot of these very large IPOs helped in tremendous amount of distribution happening. So it was also very lumpy in these very large companies as such, right? Uber, which is about $150 billion in market cap today. So a lot of these large companies gave tremendous amount of liquidity that could get distributed. And when that happened in 2021, 2022, us period ka, if you go back 10 years, it was 11, 12, when your amount of money that you were raising, see the average VC fund in the US was also $400 million in 2011-12. Today, that itself is $1 billion now. So your fund sizes have inflated, right? So there are two problems here. Like, while ZERP helped balloon the market, part of the issue is that VC fund sizes, apart from few disciplined ones like Union Square Ventures or Benchmark, which are still in the 300-400 million range, most of them are ballooned up in size. So it's very hard to distribute as a percentage of that, whether it's ZERP or not, because increasingly people are getting a little worried about the fact that if you have $1 billion fund, if you want to 3x it, you need to return $3 billion to your LPs. To return $3 billion to your LPs, you need to be holding 10% of $30 billion market cap companies. And if you believe in power law, which you should if you're playing the venture game, you're going to have one $30 billion company. And you need to hold 10% in that. It's just getting harder and harder to do this with large fund sizes. So I don't think this chart will come up very, very difficult that this chart will come up, because over the next 10 years, all these large funds that got raised during ZERP, which were $1 billion plus, are going to continuously struggle to distribute.
Also, I think most LPs or, you know, any people who have private public allocations will always have that ratio in mind. So when markets are ballooning, like when ZERP happened, then you have a larger appetite. But the moment markets correct, and you know the period is over, then your allocation to private markets also goes off. So it's a double whammy. There's an allocation deficit also, and there's an exit stress also. So then it becomes even that much harder for everyone.
And I think India, may, it's very interesting to see, but a lot of these domestic GPs who raised from Indian family offices have told me that the Indian family offices are very sharp on this. They're very vocal about their opinion that for the India TAM, a lot of fund sizes are too large, and therefore they split out most of them. They're very clear that if you want to give a 4x return in a venture business, then you need to play the fund size right. And a larger fund size is always going to make you struggle to return 4x, because most of that 4x will come from two companies. And you need to hold at least 15% as long as possible, and at least 7 to 8%, if not 10% at exit, you know, $10 billion outcome. Doesn't happen. Like, of course, all of us have seen Swiggy, where Accel and Elevation held 7, 8% at exit at $10 billion. And that's what everyone shows when they want to raise those funds. But even those funds were sub 300 million. So imagine the same Accel or Elevation, which was an 800 million fund. I think there was news that Accel just raised the 800 million fund, and Elevation last fund was 700. Let's assume the next one also will be that. Just because the fund size doubles, right, the same outcome is no longer good enough.
Yeah.
But
I think it's very interesting.
Even the $4.9 trillion is the market cap of Indian equities. What percentage of that should go to venture-backed equities over a period of time? My assumption is it should be in the 100 to 2 billion range if you say take a 10-year view to it. In which case, all venture, all funds that Accel, Elevation, Matrix, Sequoia, everyone raises will probably be less sub 10 billion or 10, 15 billion. So the idea is ki will 10, 15 billion lead to a $150 billion outcome?
यार देख इतना तू जब ग्रॉस अप करता है ना इसमें फाइट ये आता है कि नॉट एवरी यू नो आई टेल यू सी लेट्स से आई एम अ फैमिली ऑफिस राइट आई एम नॉट गेटिंग एक्सेस एंड आई एम नॉट एबल टू पुट माय फैमिली थिंग एंड में तो यू हैव टू प्ले द टॉप फंड्स राइट हु विल गिव मी 25-30% IRR ओवर एवरी फंड एज सच एंड दैट्स लाइक लेस देन 5% ऑफ द VC फंड्स इन द कंट्री. So if you're not in those 5%, it's like this, right? Yes, the stock market has given 15% CAGR over the last 10, 15 years, right? There's a reason someone makes 45% and someone still makes 5% in the same period. You have to be an excellent picker and you get multiple shots in the public market. Unfortunately, in the private market, once you fire a shot, you're done for 10 years. You have no option but to stay the course for 10 years to see how the outcome comes in, right? So it's a much harder thing to play, and therefore discipline on fund sizes is just a prudent strategy in my opinion.
Good point.
See, the same advice that funds give founders, right, which is don't raise a lot, right? The same applies to them as well, no? Don't raise a lot, be more disciplined. It works both ways. I mean, in every sense, you will be a better, you'll be more focused on delivering outsized return if you are focused and prioritize the few things that you can be very, very good at versus trying to do everything because you have a large size fund. Same things happens with founders, right? You have a lot of capital. You have a large team. I myself have done that mistake multiple times in spite of me giving this advice right now. But maybe it's the gray hair after committing that mistake multiple times, right? Ki, in the end, choice actually creates more chaos versus the fact that, you know, yaar ek hi cheez kar sakte ho to, you know, let's not hedge, let's just go all in on.
Rivas, explain one thing to me. I always had this question and maybe you know the answer. With founders raising capital, you're right. So agar if you raise 100 million, that money hits your bank and then your treadmill starts from that post-money valuation. You have to give return on that from that point onwards. But with funds, even if you raise an $800 million fund, you are still drawing down from it, and is your IRR calculated on the drawdown amounts or on the total fund size? Because even if, let's say, if I was a fund manager, I have raised 800 million, but I only find opportunities worth 400 million. Do I have to give IRR on 400 or on 800?
So it's a very fair question. First of all, it's only on the drawdown. So your IRR clock starts once you draw down, and you know every drawdown, effectively the IRR clock for that amount will be from there, right? But tell me this, na, would you look very smart if you said, I can see amazing opportunities in India where I can deploy 800 million in 3 years, and then you go back and say, sorry, mereko opportunities dikh nahi rahi hai. It's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy, no?
But that's better than saying I deployed 800 million and I have lost half of it because
I am yet to meet, GPs who can play that out. Let me give you an example. At the end of ZERP, when people realize that there were no longer a lot of opportunities in the US, a lot of funds downsized very quickly. Most US funds have downsized idly for both two things. One is opportunities not being there. Second, LPs didn't have enough capital and they said that, boss, we can't help you with this much. Let's right-size the fund. A lot of funds split their fund. I think it was a founder's fund that said they had raised, I think, $2 billion. They said, we'll cut the fund 7 into 1 billion and we'll put the next billion in the fund 8. So we will restart the clock for that one. And there were a lot of things that got done. I'm yet to see that in India. It's almost like how founders don't want a down round and therefore a lot of times don't raise that round so that, you know, down round ho jayega ya log kya bolenge. I think there's a similar pressure on VCs to not do a smaller fund than before because the media will jump onto it and say that, hey, you're raising lesser money than last time. Kuch to takleef hui hai karke aapko. It is, you know, in the end, this is a very public thing, right? I can already see how smart it was. Like Accel just raised their latest fund. It's exactly the same size as the last fund or 10 million more than the last fund, right? No questions get asked, right? But if they have raised even 20 million less than the last fund, 20 people would ask them, kya hua, aap kam kyun race kar rahe ho karke. Now,
itna perception matter karta hai kya inko? Like, after,
I think it's a little self-inflicted. Like, I just think Indian media plays it like that, right? Abhi Yashasvi ne ek bar hero bana, wo bola ki slow aa raha hai ball, do bar bold ho gaya, to log bhi lenge na uski. To India mein apna na thoda sa wo mentality alag hai.
Thoda confidence hi kami hai. Ki we got to get all shots right. It will happen, what Shantanu is saying, it will happen. You will get, let's say, a founder who will pitch you a 5 billion story, and then, you know, sometimes you will realize that it's going to be $1 billion outcome, which is great, right? Similar for funds, na, that you, I think Peak has reduced their fund size, right? The growth very recently. But I think the interesting point is to realize that once you raise a very large fund, you know, just for context, let's say if somebody owns 10% in a $1.5 billion outcome, you know, if they were a $300 million fund, they get half the fund. But if you were a $800 million fund, then it practically is like, you know, okay, I need to get probably six more like this to get to, you know, a fund size, and then maybe return on top of it. So that's the large context that, you know, in India, raising some of these large or very, very large funds, does that mean that, you know, we are going to, the country has potential to generate those large size outcomes? You've seen Swiggy, you've seen Zomato, but are there many? You know, are there many? Zepto possibly is one in the making, but are there many? And I think it's a hard one, that one, if there aren't many, then you got to pick. And then, you know, the probabilistic theory would say that, you know, you are less likely to win amongst all those bets. You get one shot at making one very, very large outcome. It's going to be like 2-3x of your fund return. It's hard.
Yeah. I think one interesting analogy for founders from this is, at least when a lot of them come and ask me, should I raise from fund A or fund B? Like recently, there was a situation where this came up, and it was a speech that founder and I said, why do you want to raise from an $800 million fund? It's a $1 million check. Raise it from a smaller fund who will have a lot more skin in the game, who will be happy even if they're 20x from here. But the $800 million fund, even if they're 50x that $1 million, is not going to move the needle for them. So I think alignment of incentives is a very interesting thing that this leads to for the founder as to which funds they should raise from. I think India Quotient has always been a very strong vocal. They've been quite vocal about this in public, which is to say that work with a smaller fund at this stage because they will care a lot more. I mean, maybe it's a little emotional, maybe it's a little self-serving, but it is partially true that a $100 million fund will have a lot more invested in your success when they've just put $1 million, because even for them, even a 50x from there means half the fund. But for an $800 million fund, that $1 million is not going to, I mean, it's not that they don't care. It's just that they would expect you to grow faster because they can deploy more capital. And in some ways or form, it's a little detrimental, because we at one point of say, don't raise a lot of capital. But by design, the $800 million fund would want to deploy more capital in its winners so that they could have even a larger ownership and therefore a larger outcome. So incentives don't get aligned in large fund cases as well.
This is a situation where, I mean, $800 million fund ideally should not have the bandwidth to do $1 million checks. Like that should not be a part of their game at all, right? But think about this the other way, Revan, that if I'm a founder and I'm returning 50 times the value to someone, the fact that I have to feel like I have not moved the needle for them is a really strange dynamic.
Yeah.
If I have taken 100 rupees, I have done 50 times, I should feel happy about what I've done for you. But if you tell me that this doesn't move the needle for me, I'm like, boss, then your denominator is unfortunately really unfair.
Nobody says it, by the way, just to be clear. No fund ever says that you're not moving the needle for me. But you see it in the behavior where they will say, take more capital. Go faster, take more capital. What do you need? Like, tu jitna capital chahiye utna bata, hum denge.
So do the 50x on 20 million, not on 1 million. Yeah.
Correct. So they will push more capital down your throat, which is to say, take more capital and we can own more. We don't have a problem and we can even maybe value you more. Because the simple thing for a large fund to do is say that let's give a higher valuation. That's how, by the way, they get most of the deals, right? They can give you a higher valuation and founders feel nice when their companies are valued higher, right? So it takes a Herculean effort to say that, no, I'll keep it fair value and let me build it the way that businesses can get built. And there are businesses that need those kind of funds as well. Like a Zepto would clearly benefit from an $800 million fund, would say that, boss, I have capital to bana karke. So there are businesses that need that. There are businesses that don't. But I don't think that distinction is made today in the industry. Because see, money managers will play every sector. Unka kaam hai paisa banana. I think founders in each sector need to know ki yaar, who is the right partner to work with.
And I think what happens is, we have seen this in Zarpera when it gets crowded. Typically, you will see large funds also come down. Right? We saw all sort Tiger do $2-5 million deals. Right? So it comes down, and then, you know, all of these situations arise where, you know, Tiger is not, or similar funds are not even on the board seat, not even exercising anything, not giving any valuable input, just is capital. Because I think the larger point is that it does not matter to them in their scheme of things. The $2 million, $5 million position does not matter. Right? But Shantanu, to your point, I think as and when it gets crowded, I think all we see is, instead of becoming more like going up, becoming more diligent in terms of finding that company, I think they tend to come down.
Yeah.
Even the larger ones. Right? So they will tend to come down, and which creates some of these things in terms of which partner you should be really working with. I think interestingly, you know, we'll move to one more interesting chart in the same one.
This was an interesting chart, again, shared by Harnir on American adults with obesity. And I don't know why the number is coming down, but here, an interesting trend that's happening globally is the consumption of GLP-1, which is a Eureka drug, which was supposed to be for diabetes. Now people are taking it rampantly for just weight loss, while the Indian regulators have still cleared it only for people with diabetes. We know a bunch of folks who are already taking it for weight loss in India as well. It's not even available in India through the right channels. People are either getting their family to pick it or black mein mil raha hai. But I think obesity is a big issue in the West. It is becoming a large issue. Diabetes and obesity are both becoming a big issue in India as well. It's an interesting chart. Does US have a shot at reducing the number of folks who are obese by just getting them dependent on GLP-1s like they are today? Or is there any fundamental solve? Like, Europe clearly doesn't have that problem. Japan doesn't have that problem because people walk a lot. They eat unprocessed foods as well as they walk a lot. US is a lot of processed food. They don't walk as much. India, by the way, at least the urban cities are getting to the same issue, right? We eat a lot of processed food. Our favorite topic every episode is the 10-30 minute food delivery to the food delivery. Shantanu, your LinkedIn post, which became very famous on eating healthy and stuff like that.
Yeah. My post affected most of all my quick commerce teams, who are under severe pressure from account managers who feel like I have been rather personal about it. I'm like, guys, not at all.
Your
anti quick com.
Huh?
Cooker gift. Cooker gift.
Sorry, Revata, I interrupted you.
Yeah, but I think the chart was shared with a concept around that if GLP-1s come into India, is there a chance to rethink how we approach the health opportunity, right? Whether you can make these drugs available right now. By the way, the tablets are pretty expensive. A 30-day course is like 10,000 rupees. And the tablet is only half as effective as the injectable. And the injectable's even more expensive, right? And I like how they ended that post, which just to say that, you know, is there a way for us to be healthier and have a more intentional future with maybe some of these drugs being available in India as well? I think it's a good shortcut and approach. Clearly, a lot of our diabetic population and obese population may need a shot in the arm, literally, with the injectable to sort of get them to a little healthier space. But we don't know the long-term effect effects of these drugs. But net-net, I mean, we this week also saw, heard about the sad demise of one of our fellow founders, Rohan, who started Epigamia. And this is now happening quite often, right? We are seeing healthy late 30s, early 40s individuals pass away without any specific complications as such. So while we look at just diabetes and weight loss in this chart, broadly there seems to be a health epidemic that India is headed towards. And is there a early stop to it is what came to my mind when I saw this chart.
It's scary.
We love convenience over being healthy. Shantanu, yeah. Over to you. I think this is...
No, I agree. I think Rohan's demise was... I think we had Ambrish from Pepperfry, Rohan Malhotra at Good Capital, Rohan at Epigamia. And, you know, in the last 3-4 years, we have seen... I work with OGQ, so there are cardiac events in athletes who are like the fittest, fittest of human specimens. Increasing significantly as well across the board. So there is clear correlation with age. I think 30 to 40, 45, there is a gender bias. It is more men than women. I think there is consensus now in the medical circles that estrogen kind of protects women, slightly increased arterial diameters because of that. So if you're a man in your 30s, in India, where food, water, and air pollution is so high and constant, and we don't even know like what we're eating, we don't even know. Even if you're buying vegetables and cooking a salad, or making a salad or cooking a basic vegetable soup, which should be like healthy, we don't know the background of it. So, I think 1 in 5 heart attacks in India are now under the age of 40, which is a crazy stat. So there is something that has to give. There is something that has to give. And frankly, it has personally scared me a lot. In fact, I have scheduled myself for a CT angio tomorrow, purely preemptively, something I would have never done otherwise. But I'm doing that tomorrow.
What's your view on what needs to change from a health and wellness perspective, Shant? Like, aisa to hai nahi ki we are not there. In fact, I think as a society, we are far more aware about health. And if you look at the rise of the health influencer on Instagram, whether it's Food Farmer or a bunch of other folks who have scaled. I mean, I see so many doctors now on Instagram, whether it's pediatricians, skin and hair, I understand they are obviously looking to influence a lot of the products that they recommend. But even without that, you see a lot of just pure educational content as well from doctors. So it's not that there's any lack of awareness around, or is there confusion?
Correct. I think, Mikul, Revant, is this more awareness problem actually? Shantanu, wouldn't Delhi, let's say all Delhiites know that, you're living in or breathing bad air? It's like, problem that what do you do? And these are all mostly public infrastructure things.
I think what people are aware of is, for example, sugar levels. People have a lot of devices, rings and watches to measure calories. I think Food Farmer curiosity. People are doing a lot of calorie counting. I think in general, more people have lost weight who wanted to and look fitter, right? But I think two of the big correlations with cardiac events are stress and sleep. These are two things that still even a broadly healthy person is not able to measure as much of. We still live a lot more stressful lives than earlier generations did. And we are sleeping differently. We are sleeping lesser. Our addiction to our screen has led to sleep patterns that are far more dangerous. We are dreaming a lot lesser, by the way. So if you are able to dream, that is the biggest proxy that your sleep is deep. So while we have rings and stuff to measure, REM and so on, the average person is dreaming lesser, which shows that the sleep is not as deep and good. So I think stuff that we are not able to measure actually has higher correlation with this, and stuff that we are able to measure, like, calories or whatever, uska correlation. So you're right, Chirag, to your point that we don't know what to do. And I think every body and every person is so unique and different that there is no playbook. So idea is to at least cover 80-90% of things, especially the stress, sleep and stress, sleep, exercise, and diet. On these four things, 80% of things, if you do well 80% of the time, at least you have lowered the risk. But it never eliminates the risk.
And Shantanu, but if we compare it to, let's say, any of these developed countries, they are also going through the same phone times, etc., etc. And, you know, let's say you go to all of these tier one cities, I think it's got to be that most fundamental things are okay. It's not, they're not complicating their lives by doing a bunch of other things. In terms of
hugely different.
Agree. I'm saying you look at basic things, they're running, they're doing all these, you know, marathon competitions, they're interested in sports. Everyone is playing like an hour of sports daily. AQI is, by the way, less than 10-15. Right. So that plays a huge part in terms of how do you sleep. Of course, you know, I would still say I also use a lot of these matrices in terms of measuring how the sleep is. But I think sleep is still a very under-evolved sense. Yeah. You know, we are starting to measure directionally that, okay, how much deep sleep, etc. But still, it's very directional.
Absolutely.
And as a world, we'll get there. But I think we need to, at least in India, it feels more to me like a supply-side problem. Even if, let's say, all the guys which you mentioned, which unfortunately passed away, had the ability to source good food, right? Stay in cleaner houses. But we all have seen that, you know, once you start consuming only RO water, then also it has downsides. You take care of at least the bad things, but there are downsides. Similarly, I'm telling you, even all these air purifiers are going to lead to that you require a certain immunity if you, you know, which is like comes with the environment. If you stay in like pure, like 100% pure environments, it's going to lead to lower immunities. And then also, you know, what we keep getting to that we are as a society is valuing super highly the convenience part versus the health part.
Yeah.
You know, which is what is leading to today all the boom in the quick commerce field. And my sense is that it's going to work. It's going to work. India is going to ride the 10-minute thing, which is going to happen. So we are going to consume all of those processed things.
मेरे ऑफिस में 30-40 30-40 बैग दिख गए थे रेप्टो कैफे की आजकल ऑफिस में 30 बैग
आ गए यार वो
तो हो रहा है वो तो माय आल्सो आई थिंक साउथ एशियन जीन्स यार सिटी साउथ एशियन जीन्स आर वेरी क्लियर डिस्पोजिशन टू दीस थिंग्स वी हैव एन लाइक जेनेटिक डिसएडवांटेज है इस पे तो वी हैव टू वर्क हार्डर ऑन ऑल ऑफ दीस फ्रेंड्स टू काइंड ऑफ बिकम इजी सो व्हेन यू से सप्लाई साइड प्रॉब्लम यू मीन इन टर्म्स ऑफ व्हाट
In terms of, let's say, you know, while food is available, do our, let's say, food regulation authorities need to step up the game?
100%.
Right? 100%. I don't know. So, it's an unknown territory for me.
Now you have to go back, okay, for example.
But I think, Chandru, what double-edged sword hai. You know, if I were of, let's look at it from the shoes of a food regulator. They also have the responsibility of that 1.4 billion people need to be fed.
Absolutely. So, for example, if you look at our rice and wheat yield per acre from 1960 till today has gone up almost 5x. So we have done tremendous work at a seed level, seed modification to harvesting technology to make sure that yield goes up so India does not starve. We were a famine ridden country post-independence. So abhita kabhi now per acre yield has gone up. बट न्यूट्रिशन पर एकर हैज कम डाउन सिग्निफिकेंटली सो अगर आप एक किलो चावल खाते हो तो न्यूट्रिशन है उसमें वो ऑलमोस्ट 1/3 हो गया है कंपेयर टू लाइक आई डोंट नो व्हेदर यू हैव सीन लाइक पीपल फ्रॉम द अर्लियर जनरेशन से ना कि अभी जो रोटी का टेस्ट है या फिर जो चावल का टेस्ट है या फिर जो न्यूट्रिशन है वो कम हो गया विच इज बाय डिजाइन बिकॉज यू हैव काइंड ऑफ फेड 1.4 बिलियन पीपल एंड दैट प्रोडक्ट नाउ हाउएवर वी हैव टू वन ऑफ द बिगेस्ट कोरिलेटर्स फॉर यू नो फॉर पोस्टनेटल डेथ फॉर वुमेन वॉज नरिशमेंट इशूज दैट वुमेन pregnant women who were unable to kind of who had mortality was because nourishment was not high enough, right? So we have to now start focusing on nourishment in the food supply chain from seed onwards, right? So I think usme par education
you mean to say ki humne quantity ke liye solve kar diya hai, but quality has deteriorated. Now we need to focus more on the qualitative aspect.
Yes, and when quality means nourishment. So for example, we need a certain amount of not only calories and energy, but protein. So abhi protein sabko pata hai ki 80 gram protein chahiye jo bhi hai. Now, but supplements, you know, vitamin D, is half the people are vitamin D, you know, deficient. So across the board, jo nourishment hai, wo nahi ho raha hai apne ko. Even people who have like Mr. Ambani's wealth, for example, may not have the knowledge to know where to source it from or where, how to include it in your daily life.
Trust ka bahut issue hai, Shantanu. I mean, what you are saying प्रोटीन डेफिशिएंसी तो 20 साल से ऐसा नहीं और 50 साल से, बट द नंबर ऑफ लाइक इवन नाउ माय पेरेंट्स विल नहीं नहीं ये सब तो कुछ नहीं, हम तो ऐसे ही बड़े हो गए करके, राइट? लाइक सेम विद विटामिन डी, राइट? लाइक आई कीप गिविंग इट टू माय पेरेंट्स वंस अ वीक एंड दे लाइक नहीं नहीं चाहिए. आई एम लाइक बॉस यू जस्ट नीड इट एट 75, आई डोंट वांट टू टेक अ रिस्क वेयर यू हैव इवन लाइक
पॉइंट
डेफिशिएंसी, राइट? तो डॉक्टर ने बोला ले लो ना करके. सो दैट अनफॉर्चुनेट distrust ki yaar these guys are all doing it to make money. Of course, like I run a health and wellness business, of course I'm gonna make money, but I'm not trying to make money by just fleecing you and telling you you should take something that you don't, right? You genuinely need, if you need it take it, if you don't need it don't take it.
Or you go for a walk in the sun for an hour every day, you do that. Or you go for a walk in the sun for an hour every day, but we don't have the time or we don't have the roads or the pedestrian facilities to do that in
urban. Yeah, absolutely. India. You should do that, and that too you have to do it in the morning sun. Now, aisa nahi ki 12 baje ki dhoop mein karoge to hoga khat. Morning sun, like jab sunrise hota hai tabhi karna hai aap karke aapko.
Correct.
Right. So I mean the you do that. You're right. Yoga karo. So my dad keeps telling me this, right? You breathe clean air at sub 20 AQI because you breathe 25 kilos of air a day. So it's important that 25 किलो जो आपके अंदर जा रहा है बॉडी के वो 25 किलो ऑफ एयर इज 20 AQI और 300 AQI. 4 लीटर्स ऑफ वाटर, ईट वेरी क्लीन अनप्रोसेस्ड फूड, डू योगा फॉर 1 आवर एवरीडे, वॉक फॉर 1 आवर एवरीडे एंड लिफ्ट सम वेट्स एवरीडे.
करेक्ट.
यू विल हैव नो इश्यूज.
करेक्ट. आई एग्री.
राइट. बट भाई अगर नहीं हो पा रहा है तो टेक सप्लीमेंट्स. बट वो आई थिंक द ओवरऑल आई सी अ लॉट ऑफ, I mean, the youth is changing. The good part is, I see today's 24-year-old far more open to do these things versus the 35-year-old today. I mean, Chirag is a big convert. Chirag obviously now keeps pinging me, ki yaar, achha, magnesium kaun sa lena hai karke. So, I mean, I keep telling him, achha, aise ye try kar. So, there's a lot of experimentation also going on. And everybody's body is different, right? I think we have a lot more Huberman, Andrew Huberman watchers also in India now that people are at least waking up to these things. But it's still a very small part of the population that is in some way or form maybe looking to, I think longevity is even a smaller percentage, but there is a certain which is now saying that, yeah, let's just live a more healthy life. And if it requires maybe spending 2,000, 3,000 rupees a month on supplementation, then we should just do that, right? But we are still far cry away from where we should be. I don't think we need to become the pill-popping citizenship like it is in the US. But, I mean, we don't want to become, unless somebody wants to live forever like Brian Johnson, who takes 144 supplements a day. But I think the answer lies somewhere in between. And maybe what we should do is, for 2025, take a health resolution that in this podcast, we'll talk about one thing that we do at least every day. Maybe the audience can benefit from that a little.
Yeah. I think one of the things with COVID is like I've really like started respecting. I was 33, 34 when COVID hit, right? So time where the body starts kind of starts showing vulnerability. So just exercise regimen of 3 to 4 times a week at least, 45 minutes to an hour. And even if there are a month or two of no exercise, for example, I have started feeling like my body is fit enough to like take it forward. So even if my weight goes up and down, you know, lethargy goes up and down, as long as I'm overall consistent, it makes sense. And second is just eating slowly. For me, that has been such a big unlock. Ki agar main dheere khaunga, toh kam khaunga. So I consciously have started eating slowly. Last 4 or 5 years, I've done that. And I've just realized that the calorific intake, also mindfulness.
But isme na, Shantanu, I think, see, we are not experts as such, but maybe, for example, in one of these episodes, you should talk about the science behind eating slowly. It's not just, you know, you're feeling that, achha, main kam khaunga. There is a science to it.
Yeah, you eat with your eyes, so you tend to feel a lot more fuller, absorb nutrition.
There is a science to a lot of these things that we should maybe cover, and we don't need to cover it in, yeah, but maybe 10 minutes in every episode, if people are listening to an hour, maybe 10 minutes, we could also tell them a little bit about what we have learned in terms of health and wellness. Not that we are the epitomes of healthy living. Certainly, I am not. You and Chirag are far more...
You're healthy, Rachel.
Yeah, I'm thoda complicated kar dete, Revant. I think not for, you know, the discussion, but what resolution you were saying. I think people end up complicating things way, way too much. You know, ki main itna lift karunga, main itna marathon bhagunga, all of that stuff. But I think maybe, you know, resolutions like these, especially at our age, should be more input focused. That, okay, you know, like what Chandran was saying, okay, can I do 3-4 times a week? So 4 times a week or 50, you know, weeks in a year will become 200 days.
Yes.
If you are able to do 200 days in a year, I think it's a very good goal. You will end up doing weights also. You'll end up running 10 kilometers of run also. So I think instead of chasing those outcomes, which probably are good when you are 20, this input becomes an important thing that, you know, are you able to do it with more discipline? Yeah. Are you able to do it continuously, especially with the amount of travel we do? Are you able to consistently over different cities in different time zones able to do this and make it part of like your daily schedule?
Yeah, I think do simple things which are sustainable. So I agree with 3-4 times a week, eating slowly. And the one thing I'm going to add to this is I'm actually not going to take my mobile phone into the bedroom from now. Like, I'm going to leave it on charge outside. I'm not going to sleep with it and I'm not going to wake up with it. This is clear. There'll be a 9:30 p.m. end time and I will pick it up only after I've taken a shower. Like when going to work or when the day is starting, not in the morning. ये difficult होगा मेरे लिए because I'm a very phone addict type of guy. But ये करूँगा मैं अभी.
I don't have any resolutions. I don't have any resolutions, but maybe all I can contribute is my knowledge of supplements that I keep reading about. So 2025, maybe every before the end of every episode, I'll talk about one supplement that I really enjoyed learning about. Not that I take so many supplements, but if Brian Johnson takes 144, clearly we have a lot of knowledge to pass on.
But Raymond, I would love to know separately, maybe after this thing, what supplement someone like me, I've never been a supplement oriented person, but what I can, the basic stuff that I can start with. I don't mind getting onto that path also. Another thing with like for viewers is my personal favorite and world renowned, I think, nutritionist is a woman named Marion Nestle, N-E-S-T-L-E, M-A-R-I-O-N-N-E-S-T-L-E. She's 87 years old and she's kind of the author of a lot of things and she's kept things very simple. So there's a 2.5-hour episode with her on a podcast. Maybe you can find that link and we'll put it on the episode. But she has made like, she's so sensible and academic and purposeful about the way she thinks about nutrition. I think spending 2 hours listening to her is a great starting point for anyone who wants to get their diet to be better. It's not a lot of gyan, ek khao, wo khao, ek khao, mat khao. She's like just very, I think she said it nicely. She said, my 55 years of nutritional science can come down to one basic thing. Eat whole foods, mostly vegetarian, not too much. And then she breaks that down into like a million things. So it's really cool. It's really cool. She's ironically named Nestle. And she's like, I have nothing to do with it.
Nestle is like the epitome of food that is bad for. But seriously, I mean, the. See, it's made for the masses, no?
Correct. I think we are missing the larger point here that, you know, all. I remember speaking to Nestle CEO like maybe a decade ago, and he was saying that if companies like us don't exist now, there is a real starvation issue which will happen. Right? So they've done their job. I think what needs to happen is maybe what we were discussing, that more tiering needs to happen at the regulation level.
Yeah.
That, you know, all things can't be that, okay, this is the minimum criteria and then, you know, everything about this is okay. Maybe there needs to be some other mechanism of doing A, B, C, D type of rating and then we go about it. But having said that, Nestle, I think, has done, it's an important part of the overall ecosystem, all of these companies, in terms of ensuring that they do these mass innovations which are able to serve, you know, millions of people.
Absolutely.
Interesting, guys.
But yeah,
it's been a different kind of an episode wherein we are sitting together, two people are sitting together, but yet different. And then not in the same country.
Yeah. And I think the highlight of this episode, CD, has to be your Santa Claus cap. So
Merry Christmas to everyone.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year to everyone, and Sriti, I'm expecting you and Revan to bring back a lot of gifts. You're my Santa Clauses in more ways than one.
And I think before we end, going to the Boxing Day test match tomorrow, we have had different views on who should be batting, let's say, if Rohit wins the toss tomorrow. Chandra, you might have a different view. We might have a different view because we're going to watch live. But what is your take?
We should never chase. I think we should
bat first.
Yeah.
Yeah, bat first looks like a green pitch. I was reading some of the pitch reviews. Looks like a green pitch. By the way, McSweeney's out. We have a new teenager who's going to open tomorrow.
Excellent. So
it's going to be a big day for all the Australian fans also.
Amazing.
And I think Hazelwood is out. We have a new bowler as well. Hazelwood is also out. He's injured.
They're going to miss Hazelwood. I think we should take advantage of that. They're going to miss Hazelwood for sure.
Yeah.
Big void. But yeah, Raven City,
okay.
Have a great Boxing Day. And to all our viewers, have a festive season. Healthy, happy, and see you guys next year.